You are listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we continue our series of candidate forums with a Democrat running for a congressional seat in Wisconsin's 1st District.
Right now, it sounds like something out of a James Bond movie, a fortress in remote Norway protecting a global treasure. But it does exist, and the precious treasure is the world's diversity of seeds.
The Svalbard Global Seed Vault is located on an island halfway between Norway and the North Pole, and it's built to withstand any foreseeable disaster, whether natural or man-made.
Its mission is to preserve the genetic diversity of the Earth's seeds, specifically of the world's agricultural plants. Currently, the vault holds more than 860,000 samples originating from almost every country on the planet. Even though that's just a fraction of the vault's storage capacity, it already holds the most diverse collection of food crop seeds in the world.
Tracy Hetherington is an associate professor of anthropology and associate dean of the graduate school at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She's been studying the seed vault for several years and joins us now from our Milwaukee studios. Tracy, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, can you start by describing the Svalbard Global Seed Vault for us? What is it and what does it look like?
Well, it is basically a very large storage building built into the side of a mountain in northern Norway in the Arctic permafrost region. And it is set up in order to take backup samples of seeds from seed banks and research facilities around the world.
So this is not the only seed bank in the world, but it sounds as though this was intended to be the seed bank of last resort.
That's one way of putting it. I think the Svalbard Global Seed Vault is a very, very important backup storage space. So what happens is that you have about 1,400 seed banks around the world, 1,700 seed banks around the world that are living seed banks. And we call them living seed banks because these are the facilities that are not only storing seeds, but constantly regenerating seeds, making sure that the genetic samples they have remain viable so that when you plant them again, they will continue to reproduce seed once again. And of course, every time you grow out a set of seed samples, you also have the issue of needing to check to make sure that those samples are continuing to remain true to type, as they say. So it's very necessary to plant things out and regrow them on a regular basis. And of course, depending on what kind of seeds you're using, there are longer or shorter storage times. But if you store them at minus 18 degrees Celsius, minus 20 degrees Celsius with a very low humidity, you stand a good chance of keeping them for a very long time. So what they do is that they realize that if you have seeds stored in a single institution, they still remain vulnerable. Ultimately, if something happens to the power supply, if something happens that their maintenance schedule can't be maintained because of budget cuts, if something happens that the personnel who are responsible for maintaining the facility have to change over and something gets lost or misplaced, you want to have that additional secondary storage site that enables you to replace samples that could be lost. And there are a variety of reasons why that could be happening. Why that could happen. So it's incredibly important that people have come together to try and work out a global system, a global database, a global initiative in order to make sure that we have these seeds conserved.
And you're an anthropologist, which is an interesting angle into all of this because you're not coming at it as a botanist or biologist, but you're also interested in the aspect of this that involves global cooperation. What parts of that interest you the most?
Well, the fact that what we're witnessing here is really a common property system in the making. This is a new era for thinking about the global public good. How do we think about a global commons writ large? How do we work it out? You know, I think most of our initiatives that have transcended the nation state level are still based on countries making agreements and pacts between themselves and each nation sort of agreeing to what they're going to commit to writ large. When you talk about the Svalbard Global Seed Vault, what you're looking at is a really new institutional creature. It is overseen by the Global Crop Diversity Trust, which was formerly in Rome, housed at the FAO facilities, but has moved into Germany, in Bonn, the UN Global Sustainability Hub. And so it's very close to the headquarters of the IPCC. It's very close to a number of other international organizations that are dedicated to issues of sustainability and environmental security and thinking about the big picture. This is something really fundamentally new. It's about partnerships that span, not only nation to nation, but are also vertically complex, if you will. They're also about thinking about how those international agricultural research centers, the so-called CGIAR, centers that have been responsible for some of the most important developments in agricultural modernization, some of them very controversial, of course, but also thinking about how national seed banks fit into that, how smaller scale NGOs fit into that, thinking about how communities fit into the whole picture. And so you're starting to see some very, very interesting collaborations that take us beyond what we've ever imagined in terms of how to conserve things, how to think about biodiversity, how to think about a global commons, how to work together on it. Some of those collaborations are public-private. Some of it is thinking about, how do we imagine a global public good? How do we ensure it? How do we make sure it's safe at a whole variety of levels? So I, from an anthropological perspective, that's just incredibly interesting, and it's very much about the people at the heart of it who are making these initiatives, who are interpreting laws, who are implementing mandates, who are changing institutions from within in order to make things work.
Tracy Hetherington is with us right now. She's an associate professor of anthropology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and she's been studying the Svalbard Global Seed Vault for several years. And Tracy, you mentioned a bit earlier that the seed vault in Norway is not at capacity yet. There's room there. So I'm wondering about what sorts of seeds are yet to come and what cooperation is yet to come to fill the vault and what that might look like.
Well, there is a lot to be done. I think one of the things the Global Crop Diversity Trust is working on today is figuring out how to help out many of the smaller seed banks in developing areas. Now, we have a pretty good part of the really important international collections from the major international agricultural research centers already there because they've been collaborating on this initiative from the outset. But there are also some very, very important smaller collections that are housed in smaller national seed banks, sometimes university facilities or research centers of different kinds, that also have collections that could potentially be very valuable for the future. And so ensuring that they have the ability to choose to send things to the vault to facilitate it is one of the big priorities, to make sure that all our major food crops around the world, the Annex I food crops that are designated by the International Plant Treaty, actually go in the vault. So there's a lot of work to be done, particularly with the smaller banks supporting developing areas, institutions. And there are also things like wild crop relatives that are increasingly recognized as potentially important in agricultural research, that could help us find find crops that have the capacity to help us adapt to climate change.
And Tracy, to bring this home, make it more immediate, what are some of the biggest real-world threats to seed diversity? In other words, why might we need to go to the seed vault and take out seeds?
Well, you know, there are the simple things that we sort of take for granted. The creeping weirdness of the weather being one of them. Anybody who has planted some tomatoes that fell to rust or some sort of disease or a pest, and then couldn't harvest those crops, couldn't have chosen to save the seeds, for example, you see one of the biggest issues. Now, weather can come in a variety of forms. You can get much more extreme weather patterns in many places of the world. You have creeping droughts, the slow change of what kinds of microclimates people have grown used to and depended upon in the past, the availability of rainfall or, flooding. So the places where we are growing particular kinds of crops are, in fact, changing. Some areas in the highlands around the world, for example, you may have heard of the very famous potato park in Peru, where many Andean farmers have been growing potatoes for centuries. And they have had to basically move up the mountain in search of the microclimates where their particular varieties of potato grow best. So, the sense of varying climates becomes very very dramatic.
And Tracy, we have to leave it there. Appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Tracy Hetherington is an associate professor of anthropology and associate dean of the graduate school at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She's been studying the Svalbard Global Seed Vault in Norway for several years.
Coming up after the news, we'll talk to one of the Democratic candidates for Congress running in the 1st Congressional District. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.